Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey kids, let's travel the world together. She can make it easy and in any kind of weather. No TSA, no bag checks, no patting down. She's talking from the skies and sending lots of feel-good sounds. Oh, Betty in the sky. You heard her yet? She loves traveling, there's no doubt. Betty and the Jets. Oh, she's weird and wonderful. Oh, Betty, she's a podcast queen. She's wearing high heel shoes, got her wings on too. You know I've never seen a better stew. Oh, Betty and the Jets.
Hello, and welcome to Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. I'm Betty. I'm a flight attendant for a major airline, and I bring you stories from the airplane, from the flight attendants and the pilots, and from traveling around the world. In this episode, we have stories about lobsters, narcoleptics, TV dinners, rhinos, farts, cocktails, bees, and dolphins. The music for this show I recorded on the streets of Madrid, and there were these couples dancing in costumes. How fun is that? Let's get on with the show. So on my flight to Africa, you know, it's a hard flight. It's hard. It's hard on the flight attendants. It's especially hard on the passengers. We're talking 15, 16 hours, depending on what direction you're going. And unfortunately, I mean, it is what it is. People take things to help them sleep because they're trying to get through this long flight. And it happens a lot on those flights because people are overly concerned about the long-ass flight. So, on the way to Africa, this passenger came back and said, hey, there's a guy that's like falling over up there. So I go running up. He's by the bathrooms. He's a tall, fit young man, and he can't stand. He's falling in every direction. So another guy says, I'm a doctor, and he helps me. He goes, he's impaired. I'm like, yeah. So we get him on the jump seat at the three doors, and he keeps falling off the jump seat. Like, he keeps going to fall. So I basically put my hands on his shoulders and pinned him to the jump seat while we're working on him, trying to figure out what's going on and stuff. And the doctor's saying, you know, can you see my finger? Can you touch my nose? And then the doctor says, well, I took something too. So I'm thinking, oh, great. The brother, we find the brother he's traveling with. He's like, well, I took something. I'm like, I'm the only sober one here holding the guy. So we have a medical service we can call. And basically they ask all these questions. And also the doctor was asking all the questions. I think it took like an hour. All I thought was, let's get him back in his seat. Let him go to sleep. So he's supposed to take 5 milligrams of a prescription sleep medication, and he took 20. So he OD'd, basically. Not OD'd to die. He just can't stand. But, you know, in the hour that we were working on him, he sobered up. He woke up a little bit. But what was funny was I didn't notice. I mean, I knew he was a fit young guy, but I didn't really notice how cute he was until the emergency was over, you know, because I just don't want him to hurt himself. I don't want him to fall on somebody else. I'm just worried about the medical thing. But then once he starts getting better and stuff, I was like, oh yeah, he's cute. But the funny thing was, the doctor who had taken something, he goes, let's take his blood pressure. We have a blood pressure cuff. And he goes, his muscle's so big, I can barely get the blood pressure cuff around it. And I was like, yeah, I noticed. I was commuting home from work, sitting on the jump seat because there were no seats available, but I'm happy to have the jump seat, sitting next to a new flight attendant, young, pretty girl, and she was telling me this story that she was in some turbulence, some bad turbulence, and there was a young girl passenger who was super scared. She was so scared, she was trembling, and this flight attendant had remembered that she had this other passenger that had, she had laughed at this passenger, had this big stuffed lobster. And she said she had bought it for her dog. So she went up to the passenger with the stuffed lobster and said, "Can I borrow your lobster?" Which is not a sentence you use every day. Can I borrow your lobster? She took the borrowed lobster to the scared passenger because of the turbulence. And that passenger snuggled with the stuffed lobster. And she seemed to do a lot better. And so they landed and she's going to get the stuffed lobster back. And the passenger goes, "I didn't know that you had these on board." Like we have, and how random would it be if we have a overhead bin full of stuffed lobsters in case people are afraid during turbulence. We talk about a lot of things in the galley, and I don't know how we got on this subject. I think somebody was talking about cooking. There were about three of us in the galley on a long flight, and the one flight attendant said, I am now divorced and am remarried, but when I was married to my first husband and I had two kids, I would make them lean cuisine for dinner. And just in case, I know people listen from other countries, so lean cuisine might be a name of a frozen dinner you don't have. So picture a frozen dinner in a single serving plastic dish and then in a cardboard box. And, you know, they're fine in a pinch, but you normally don't serve them to the family. So she said when she first started dating her new boyfriend, who now second husband, she was making dinner and he said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "I'm making dinner." So she had four of these to put in the microwave to then put in a glass bowl to serve as dinner. You know, it's a TV dinner. And he goes, "Oh, I guess I'm going to have to learn to cook." So now he cooks. But she was saying that when she was doing this TV dinner to serve to the family, she would wait for them to go on sale. And when they were on sale, she would buy, because she needed like four of these to make dinner, because there were four of them. And so when they went on sale, she'd buy like 50 frozen dinners. Or she said if it was a really good sale, she'd buy like 90. She must have had like an extra freezer in the basement, or she must have had a second freezer to have all these TV dinners. But she said at the grocery store, they would call her the lean cuisine lady. But the reason why I thought this story was so interesting, later on in the flight, we were eating something on the plane and she said, "I think airplane food is delicious." And I said, "Yeah, your bar is really low. You were making TV dinners for your family. You know, airplane food is like airplane lean cuisine." This story is called Narcoleptic Doppelganger, which is hard to say. Narcoleptic Doppelganger. So this is actually an end to a story from a few years back. A few years back, I was telling this story on the podcast that I commute to work and I have to get there early to make sure there isn't a problem with my flight, to have a backup flight. So I spend quite a bit of time in the flight attendant lounge, like 3 hours, 4 hours. So I see a lot of people and I have a problem in that for two reasons. People tend to come up to me. I have no recollection of them and they go, "Hi," they're so excited and they want to hug me sometimes. And I'm thinking, I don't know who this person is. And this is for two reasons. Number one, sometimes you guys obviously know that I like to tell stories and there'll be times like in the crew van where I will tell stories and have the whole crew van, you know, a crew of like 13 people in the van laughing. So then they remember me because I made them laugh, but I don't necessarily remember them because they were just a part of a group. And the other thing is that, and this has been my whole life, I actually look like a lot of people because I have a look that a lot of people have. I'm blonde with blue eyes, a big smile, and lots of times people mistake me for somebody else. So this person, a person that's coming up to me in the lounge who's all excited to see me, I'm not going to say, I don't know who the hell you are. I mean, that would be rude. Or you have me for the wrong person. When they might not have me as the wrong person. I might just not remember them. So I have come up with this system. It's a script, basically, where I go, hi, so nice to see you. How are you doing? So this way, I'm not insulting them in any way that I don't remember them or that they think I'm somebody else. So it just works. And it happens quite often. And a few years back, and I told this story on the podcast, a flight attendant came up to me. She looked vaguely familiar, but I see a lot of people in the lounge. It doesn't necessarily mean I've flown with them, right? And I don't think I've flown with her, but she comes up and she's like, hey, and I do my big smile, which is part of my thing. And then I do my script. Hey, so nice to see you. How are you doing? And she said, we need to talk. And I was thinking, that's not part of the script. That's not how this goes. And I said, what do we need to talk about? And she goes, you know what we need to talk about. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And she's like, you know what I'm talking about. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm thinking, I don't even know who you are. I don't know what you're talking about. But I don't say that. And it's getting awkward. And she goes, you know, I wrote you up for sleeping on the jump seat. And I was like, what? This is really not part of the script. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about. And then finally she goes, oh, I think I have the wrong person. So I look like somebody else. I look like I have a narcoleptic doppelganger. But guess what? I just flew with this girl. This has been, I think it's been like 3 years ago. So now I'm flying with her. And I didn't remember at first that this was her. It's somebody, we're in first class. Another flight attendant comes up and says, oh, you look just like so-and-so. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I get that all the time. People in the lounge are coming up to me. And then I went, oh, are you the one? And she's like, yeah, that was me. I think she wasn't going to say anything because she was embarrassed that she thought I was the narcoleptic doppelganger. And she goes, yeah, it was me. And I was like, oh, you know, that was so strange because I thought, you know, I flew with you and just didn't remember, but then you came up with this sleeping on the jump seat. So then it's funny to get an end to a story that's 3 years old. So I said, well, what happened with this girl? And she's like, oh my gosh. The person who looks apparently a lot like me. She goes, she kept falling asleep. And she said, not just like one time or two times or three times. It was like seven times. And I was thinking like, what? Like, and I said, what do you mean? Because you turn around, she'd be asleep on the jump seat. And the flight attendants didn't know what to do. Like, they didn't know if she had narcolepsy, which is a disease, or if she had taken some sort of pills that were making her sleepy or some kind of, who knows, allergy medication can make you sleepy. They didn't know what, but they couldn't have this person just falling asleep all the time. It was so bad. Now, see, I didn't know any of this when she just left in the lounge. I never heard any of this, but it got so bad that the pilot and the flight attendants had a little conference about what to do with this person who looks like me. And they told her, you need to take your uniform off and sit in a passenger seat. And then a few hours later, she came up to the galley and didn't remember any of it. So, oh, that really is something. Who knows what was going on with this person who looks like me. But she came up to the galley and she goes, what's going on? Why am I not in my uniform? And so, apparently this person who looks like me has a big problem. But it's nice to get an end to the story of my narcoleptic doppelganger. I forgot to tell you this about my last month's glamping. Oh, and you know, it's a shame. I'm already over it, but I was planning on going glamping this month, and there wasn't any availability. And it was a drag because I had contacted the flight attendants and we had a group together, and then nope. But I forgot to tell you this story about last month's glamping. We had just seen, we were coming back in the dark after the sunset game drive, and it was very exciting because we saw some hippos come out of the water and they walked across the road and we were all like on a high, on a hippo high. And later on at dinner, the one flight attendant who's very funny, she goes, "Do you think hippos are afraid of microwaves?" And we all were sitting there at dinner going, "Why would hippos be afraid of microwaves?" And she said, "Because they look like potatoes." I thought it was cute. I was flying with this guy. He was really funny. I've never seen him before. And we're sitting on the jump seat. There's four of us sitting up there. It's a big plane. And he's telling this story how he was at a party. They were serving shrimp and crab. It was like at an outdoor setting in the South, I think New Orleans, maybe. And I have heard that people develop shellfish allergies later in life. And, you know, it's kind of a shocker because you've never had an allergy before. And I've always been afraid of that because I like me some shellfish. Anyway, he said he's eating all this and all of a sudden he's like thinking to himself, "My fingers are tingling." Next thing he knows, he's like, my mouth is tingling and it feels swollen. And then he thinks, my throat is constricting. I think I'm having trouble breathing. And he said, then he thought, and then a bee stung me. And then a bee stung me. Because a relative of his realized that he was having an allergic reaction, like a bad one. Like his fingers were really big. And she punctured his leg with an EpiPen. But, you know, you're not expecting that. He's just like, he's just looking at his hands. He said he'd had a couple drinks. Looking at his hands and his mouth was feeling weird and then his throat's constricting. And then a bee stung me. I'd like to thank any of you who were so kind when you were going to buy something on Amazon. You took just a second or two to go to my website, bettyinthesky.com. Click on the Amazon link. It says like click here to shop on Amazon. And I like to see what people buy. Somebody bought Not Your Typical Dragon. I guess that's a kid's book. Somebody else bought, it wasn't necessarily the item, but the amount. They bought 500 pre-filled Easter eggs. 500 Easter eggs. Maybe they work for a school or something. Anyway, somebody else bought Wiggling Worms at Work, which I just like to title Wiggling Worms at Work. And so if you click through my website, it doesn't cost you anymore. It supports the show. And I thank you so very much. This came from listener Franklin. Thank you, Franklin. And it's from the New York Post. And it's an American Airlines plane was reportedly forced to return to the gate due to high wind, a disgruntled passenger's smelly farts. The big stink over the flatulent flyer unfolded while a recent flight from Phoenix, Arizona to Austin, Texas was still on the ground, according to a Reddit post. Before most people had boarded, I observed that the man was audibly disgruntled about something, maybe hungover, rough day, I don't know. But soon as he sat down, he was grumbling about something under his breath like effing hell or something like that. After the majority of the passengers had boarded, the man reportedly exclaimed, "You thought that was rude? Well, how about this smell?" and proceeded to pass gas. I don't know what provoked that comment. And while kind of funny to overhear, it was uncalled for, especially coming from a grown man on an airplane. But the excessively farting passenger's gross behavior didn't end there. The man, who just purposely farted moments ago, decides to loudly and condescendingly say, "Yeah, everyone, let's just eat some of the smelliest food possible all the time." A guy in the front row replied, "If you don't like it, you can fly private," to which Fart Man says, "That's so effing rude." Another passenger nearby chimes in, "I think we all agree you're the rude one here," a witness added. At one point, the flight attendants intervened and told the transgressor, "That's enough." The plane was taxiing to the runway but came to a stop, according to Reddit, an announcement comes over the PA saying apologies for their interruption, but we are returning to the gate and will give you more information when we have it. We get back to the gate and the flight attendant comes up and informs Fartman, sorry, that's hard to say, that he will not be staying on the flight. He simply replies, "I don't understand." And she tells him they'll talk about it off the plane. The man grabbed his bag and got off the plane. We all breathed a sigh of relief when he was removed. I think most people were on edge about what he might say or do next. The trip was only delayed 15 to 30 minutes, so all in all, I think American handled it swiftly. But the Reddit users didn't hold in their gas-related jokes. Maybe another flight was low on gas, one person wrote. He missed an opportunity to fart on the way out and yell, "Smell you later," another one quipped. The Post has reached out to American Airlines for comment about the big stink. This was funny. I've been getting my hair cut by the same girl, very nice, young girl, youngish. And so I tell her stories all the time about my job and where I'm going. And I think she's been cutting my hair for like 7 years, a long time. But this last time I went in there to get my hair cut and she says, "You know, I was telling people that I have this client who's a flight attendant and she's like going glamping and she goes whale watching in Maui. And they told me, these people, that if you're doing those trips, that you're a very important flight attendant." And now she's washing my hair and I'm going, "Well, I'm not a very important flight attendant. I just have seniority. It all goes by seniority, just by how long you've been there." And she's like, "No, they told me that if you're doing those trips, you're a very important flight attendant." And I said, "Well, I don't even know what a very important flight attendant is. What's a very important flight?" I said, it has nothing to do with that. I just have seniority. I just been there for a while." And then she's like, "Nope." She was like insistent. "They said you're a very important flight attendant." It was like, "Okay, I'm a very important flight attendant." Whatever that means. And then I was flying with this young guy. He was in charge. And anyway, nice, cute young guy. And he comes back to the galley and he's like, "You aren't going to believe what this passenger just said to me." And I said, "What?" And he goes, it was a he. The passenger was a he. He said, he asked me, "Are you new?" And he said, "No, I'm not new. I've been here for like 5 years now. And why did you think I was new?" Because he's thinking, I must look really young, you know. And the passenger says, "Well, you haven't earned your wings yet." He had taken off his suit jacket, which has his wings on, and he had put on a cardigan sweater over his shirt because it was kind of cold while he was working, and he didn't have wings on the shirt. And so the passenger thought he hadn't earned his wings yet, kind of like an angel earned your wings. He hadn't earned his very important flight attendant wings yet. So I was flying with this girl, and I had flown with her before, and she works hard, and she's very nice. She's just a bit odd. And I don't like to poison other people's opinion of somebody else, so I thought, I knew some of the people on my crew, and they didn't know her, and I thought, I'm not going to say anything, but I'm going to see how long it takes, time-wise, till somebody says something like, to me about her. And then I could be like, "Yeah, I know." So it was like, I don't know, an hour into the flight, you know, it's like a 8-9 hour flight. An hour into the flight, the one flight attendant goes to me, "I think that girl's a little weird." And I'm thinking, yeah, uh-huh. You got it right. I've flown with her before and she's a bit of a wackadoodle. But she works hard and she's nice. So, and she's not lazy. So I don't really mind a weird person if they aren't lazy and they're nice to the passengers. But this is one of the weird things about her. And she probably doesn't even know that she does it. She has this weird, I've never seen it before, but she has what I would call a vocal fixation. You know, you can have an oral fixation where you have to have something in your mouth. You have to be sucking on something or drinking water or chewing gum. But this girl, she just makes noises. She just doesn't stop making sounds. So you might not notice it like on the beverage cart, but say you're in the van and nobody else is talking and you're sitting next to her and she's going, ouch. She went weird ones too, like, ouch, where does ouch come from? Like, it's like she doesn't stop. And it's off-putting. And so I'm both ways. I'm sitting in the van next door and she's like, ouch. I thought the ouch was weird. Just random ouches. And this guy flight attendant, we get off the van and he goes, what was she doing? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if she knows that she does it. He goes, I had to put earphones in. I couldn't handle like 45 minutes of ouch. I was working first class on the way to Europe, and for some reason, and I'm always proven wrong, but in my mind, if you're in first class, you're more I'm not going to say you're smarter, but you're more travel savvy, usually, wouldn't you think? But not always the case. It's proven to me over and over again, because on this one flight, I had two questions that kind of dumbfounded me. So I'm on the beverage cart, and this male first class passenger says, are the wardrobes locked? And I just paused, because I'm thinking, wardrobes? Where are wardrobes? What wardrobes? And I said, the what? He goes, are the wardrobes locked? And I was thinking, I don't know what he's talking about. I said, can you tell me where the wardrobes are? Because I thought maybe I can answer the question. And he points to the overhead bins. And I was like, oh, yeah, they're not locked. Can you imagine if we locked all the overhead bins? People would be going crazy. They're always in those overhead bins. Anyways, those are wardrobes. And on the same flight earlier, this female passenger has a bag from duty free. And she says to me, I bought alcohol at duty free. And I was like, okay. And she's like, I bought alcohol at duty free. I'm like, alrighty. I don't know what she wants me to do. And she goes, do you need to put it in the safe? And I was like thinking, we don't have a safe. Where's the safe? And, you know, I guess it's by the wardrobes. But it's like, I said, well, we don't have a safe. And she goes, oh, so then do you need to put this liquor up front somewhere? And I was like, no, you could put it in the overhead bin. And she's, I think maybe, see, hers was a little more justified. I'm thinking because in one of the PAs we say, it's a federal law that you can't drink alcohol that you brought on board with you. But that doesn't mean we have to keep it all in a safe somewhere or in a closet somewhere. It just means that the whole thing with that is just we don't want people to get really drunk. So we're not monitoring how much they're drinking. So you can't drink your own alcohol. So that one was a little more understandable. I think that's why she thought we had a safe by the wardrobes. But there was this French speaker who has since retired. When anybody asked her for a question about where something was that we don't have, she'd say, oh, it's by the pool. Okay, this next story is a little sad, but also a little genius. It's just, to me, I was just shocked that somebody would even think of this. So a girl was telling me, flight attendant was telling me that she knew this flight attendant who had recently gotten fired. And I was like, oh, what did she do? And she said, well, she was flying those Africa trips like Johannesburg. And those flights are like 16 hours. And so she realized that she could drink alcohol. I'm sorry. It's just amazing to me. For the first 8 hours of the flight, because we get drug and alcohol tested, but we don't get drug or alcohol tested in the air. You know, they have to have some sort of apparatus like a breathalyzer, or, you know, you have to go to the place. We have a place, the drug station at the airport, if you're going to have to pee for the drug test. So she had realized, kind of genius in a deviant kind of sad alcoholic way. Anyway, because the flight was 16 hours, that she could drink for the first 8. And then if for some reason, because there are times, like I told you, sometimes they've breathalyzed us in Amsterdam. So in case there was somebody to breathalyze her when she landed in the United States or in Africa, that she would have had, we need 8 hours. So she would have had 8 hours to sober up. I mean, so she brought her own cup. She had her own cup like that you couldn't see through, and she was drinking vodka. And this other girl who knew her, she said, well, you know, like midway through the flight, she'd start acting like goofy. And I'm thinking, yeah, she'd been drinking for 8 hours. I'm laughing, but it's not funny, but it's just, it's kind of shockingly funny that you could be that far along in your disease that you realize that you're just going to start drinking for the first 8 hours. But the reason why she got caught is, you know, I guess she got a little sloppy and she started drinking on the ground on the flight. So, and I think somebody else mistakenly took a sip out, or maybe not mistakenly, or I don't know, somebody took a sip out of her cup and was like, I was in Madrid. And I had come in from shopping. I was about to go back out. I just wanted to get rid of the stuff I was holding. And I'm in the elevator with a man with headphones in. I didn't notice the headphones right away. And I just said, oh, it's a beautiful day. I mean, it was a really beautiful day. And I could see on his face that he, a look of surprise, like, oh, a stranger is going to talk to me. Like, weird. So he takes his earbuds out and he's like, oh, it really is a beautiful day. And he's like, what are you doing here? And like, it turned out he was from England. And it turned out he was like delighted to talk to somebody, but we've just sort of gotten out of the habit. And don't you think it's a little strange that we've gotten out of the habit of talking to each other? And I don't know if I mentioned this, so much happened on my trip to the Falkland Islands in November. I don't know if I mentioned that on my way from Atlanta to Santiago, it was a type of plane that hasn't been reconfigured because I actually got in first class, only the one direction. And most of our first class, I don't know about every airline, but a lot of first class seats now, you're in your own little pod, or you don't have to step it over anyone to go to the bathroom. And a lot of people think this is an improvement, but I used to enjoy, because of my flight benefits and because I fly when people don't normally fly, and I go out of my way to try to see if I can get first class, because I know that could end at any time. And right now it's very difficult as a standby person. And I understand all of it, but I just like to take advantage of it when I can. So I did get that one first class seat. And this was a plane that hadn't been reconfigured to the pods, so we were actually just in like kind of old fashioned first class seats that did lay down, but you're actually sitting next to them. And this gentleman and I, this stranger that I was sitting next to, we talked for hours, had a lovely chat. I used to enjoy that. And while I do like the new fancy seats that we don't talk to one another, I kind of miss getting, there was always interesting people sitting up there that you have like a conversation for like 3 hours while you're having dinner and maybe a glass of wine. Then you go to sleep, you wake up, and then it's breakfast. It's almost like a date without, not a romantic date, but I could tell the man sitting next to me really enjoyed it also. And I think sometimes it's like a lost art, or it's like a sad thing that we've gotten out of the habit of talking? It's weird. In the last episode, I told you about my great trip to Magdalena Bay, Mexico, to see the friendly gray wolfins. I was thinking whales and dolphins and called them wolfins. Anyway, the friendly gray whales. And 3 listeners have told me that they have since then booked a trip for next year to see the whales. That's, I don't know, so fun to know that I don't know if inspiring is a good word, but encouraging people to go to these really fun places. And so on that trip to see the wolfins, the whales, after that, I went to Laredo and I had booked this trip, and we ended up The boat driver said, you want to see some dolphins? And then we ended up having this crazy Mexican dolphin party where he said, oh, dolphins like music with a good beat. And he started playing this Mexican music and he started clapping, going, come on, come on, and all these dolphins. And so I told you in the last episode, I thought, I'm going to go home because I kayak where there's dolphins. And, you know, and lots of times I don't see them and I get excited when I see them. And I thought, I'm going to play some Mexican music with a strong beat and go, come on, and I'm gonna be the dolphin whisperer, right? And it didn't work. It was like a wah, wah, wah. So recently I thought, maybe, you know, these South Carolina dolphins don't like Mexican music. Maybe I should try some other kind of music that has a strong beat. So I Googled songs with a strong beat. So I waited till I was a little bit far out of the marina because I don't want to be, you know, there's houses there, and I don't want people going, who's the crazy girl in the kayak playing Mexican mariachi music? But this time I decided to play Uptown Funk, you know, Uptown Funk you up, Uptown Funk you up. And so I paddled out and I put it and I tried to do it kind of loud and like did a whole, come on, nobody's out there, you can see me, come on, come on. And again, wah, wah, wah. not a single dolphin. And I guess, you know, dolphins just aren't into funk. Well, that's about it for this episode of Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. I hope you'll join me again next time so we can travel around the world together. Thanks. Bye.